Niall Williams is a novelist, playwright and screenwriter whose last book, History of Rain, was longlisted for the Man Booker Prize. His new novel, This Is Happiness, tells a coming-of-age story of Noel Crowe, and it's set at the time of rural electrification in a small village in County Clare. And Niall Williams is with me in studio to tell me more. Rural electrification and the 1950s, 1940s yes. and 1950s, that must have been something that was a big starting point for you here, because the book is suffused with detail about that particular set of events, really, in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, well, I think I do believe it was a threshold moment in Irish life. And so my own experience of facing that was, Chris and I moved to West Clare in 1985.
This is your wife, Chris.
Yeah, and we had been living at the time in New York for 5 years. And when we moved there in 1985, I was very struck by the fact that people could remember the day the electricity was switched on. Now, I grew up in Dublin, and my father was the secretary of the ESB. So I grew up with electricity all the time and awareness and talk of electricity. But it never occurred to me of a time before electricity, other than the time that you read of in books in the 19th century. Mm. And the idea that, as it happens in this novel, that in 1958, the year that I was born, a place could be connected to electricity, just was too rich a moment for a fiction writer to ignore.
And it is fiction, because I presumed, I asked you just before we came to air about this, I thought, oh, there's some story in the background somewhere in Niall's, either in his own life or a cousin or somebody who had, as they would have might have been called, an electric man.
The electric
coming
man,
to,
yes.
To lodge in their home. But this is all, it's totally fictional.
It is fictional. Now, as I said, when we moved there, people did tell me lots of stories. And I've heard lots of stories about people's response to electricity when it first came. And so also the fact that we had come from New York to the west of Ireland. So the thing that struck you was the dark of the winter skies, the immense stars, a world that you could easily imagine before electricity. And then when I began to hear stories of things like the fact that when they switched on the electric light for the first time, they saw themselves as they had never seen themselves before. And it was shocking, you know?
It's like the lights at the end of a disco.
Yeah, okay. So, yes. Yeah. So that sense that the 100-watt light bulb was too bright, that they had to go and get a softer light bulb because the shock of seeing yourself, and that people also, having lived with candlelight and paraffin lamp, didn't illumine above themselves very much. So they look up with the electric light turned on and you see all the cobwebs in the ceiling and you see the world above your head in a completely different way. And so obviously that moment of seeing was perfect for a story about a young boy coming to see the world in a different light.
And the young boy here is Noel Crowe.
Yes.
Who's staying, in fact, with his granny and granda.
Correct.
Ganga and Dodie.
Yes.
He's staying with them for a period that, for whatever reason, he's not with the family. There's a big family and he's staying with them. And into this situation comes this electric man.
Christy,
who's going to be part of the rural electrification scheme. Was it Noel or was it Christy who started tapping on your writer's shoulder first, looking to tell his story?
Well, probably Christy. Probably I began with Christy, or a sense of the stranger coming to town, essentially. This idea of electric man coming and an older person. And I was interested in the relationship between a person who was in their teens and a man in his 60s and that older relationship.
And there's absolutely, there's nothing untoward about this relationship.
No.
It's purely they just become good pals.
Absolutely. So it's Noel being brought out around the parish by the electric man. At that time, there was a thing called the memorial, which people had to sign up to say they would take the electricity. And of course, people didn't want to say that they wouldn't take it when faced, just out of courtesy, to a stranger, and they would put their name down and say they would take the electricity. But when it actually came time to say that the wires would come into their house and they would have to sign up and pay an account and so on, a lot of people balked. And so it's that moment between, could they take that step essentially into the 20th century or not?
There must be parallels, and you must have come across parallels with those events in the 40s and 50s and early 60s in some cases, and the current debates and events around the spreading
of broadband.
Absolutely.
So it's a quite similar thing. There's a sense in a place where we live, in Kiltumper, for example, of the world of broadband is in a different geographic location. It's just not where we are. And yet, so there's that distance, and that distance is more than just a distance of geography. It's a distance of way of life. You know, so that people speak about, they have so adapted to having broadband and having that, they don't even think about it anymore. Mm. I suppose in exactly the same way as people who had electricity, like I did growing up, never thought for a second about what it would be like if you didn't, do you know?
And do you think that in terms of that broadband, do you think we're at as significant a social moment,
I do,
if you like?
Yeah, absolutely.
In terms of the changes,
absolutely.
You know, pre-broadband, post-broadband,
yes.
Pre-electricity, post-electricity.
I do. I think it is as dramatic as that.
And how? What do you see as the big change that's happening, you know, if you had to...
Well, I think when the broadband is fully available in the west of Ireland, many people will work and live in the west of Ireland, and their way of living in the west of Ireland will be completely different to how it is now, because they'll just have access. They won't have to be always heading towards the capital. They won't always have to be heading towards the cities. So I think it will change rural life and how one can live and work in rural life enormously.
Which is something you did as a writer.
Yes.
In a certain sense, you left New York to come back to
Absolutely.
To you could do that as a writer. You didn't
yes.
need to have broadband necessarily.
No, not for tapping away, as I'm tapping away every day.
Please tell me that this man, however, because I know that Christie is a
fictional character.
Noel is a totally fictional character, and
yes.
other characters that come in, which we might come back to, are fictional inventions as well. Tell me that Dermot Mangan is not an invention.
He's not an invention.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Tell me what, because this guy just sounds like we need him. We need him today to go and negotiate several deals for us, in fact.
Yeah.
Tell us what he did back at the beginning of rural electrification.
So for the rural electrification, it is a fact that the first significant issue that they faced was they needed to get all the electricity poles. And they decided that these poles should best come from the forests of Finland.
Couldn't get them at home.
Couldn't get them at home.
For post-colonial reasons.
No, as many as they needed now, they needed to go to the forests of Finland. So the ESB, the supply board, they sent this man to the forests of Finland to negotiate and acquire the forest that would become shipped to Ireland to become every single electrical pole that exists in the west of Ireland, or has existed in the west of Ireland up to 15 years ago, came from the forests of Finland.
And they needed a million? Was that,
so,
that was
yes.
the figure? Yeah.
So he had to negotiate. So the Finns, he was told what price he could offer per pole.
£3.10.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. The Finns, the man that he was dealing with, the Agricultural Department of Finland, he didn't agree the price, and so
he was looking for £4.
He was looking for £4, and so what Dermot did was he wanted to send a telegram back to Dublin to say, "See, this was the price," and see what they would say. And he sent the telegram in Irish, and he got the reply back in Irish, so that because the telegraph office was in the Finn's department office, so the negotiation when he said that although the electricity supply board had accepted the offer, he himself said no, they had refused it.
He put on his poker face.
And because it was in Irish and all the telegrams went back and forth in Irish, he continued to negotiate the price down for, I think, 3 months until eventually the Finns gave up.
And gave them £2.
£2, correct.
Half the price
yes.
that they were looking for originally.
Yeah.
And
that's
this,
true.
This man was a forester. This man wasn't
a negotiator
or a politician of any kind.
No, they sent him actually into the forest then to actually mark each pole. So he was there for a long time.
I hope he got a good rate per pole.
Yeah.
And that he negotiated a good deal for himself.
So it's amazing. So the electricity, the actual idea of saying that you should have electricity in the west of Ireland is one thing made in Dublin central office. But actually what it took to make that happen in the landscape of the west of Ireland, to bring the poles, mm-hmm. bring the wiring, bring everything, is just an enormous sort of heroic story, I think. And for a fiction writer, it's just gold.
Yeah, so you weave aspects of those actual happenings
yeah.
into
the history,
this,
yeah.
this fictional world
yes.
that you create. A very important aspect of the story, I think, is storytelling itself.
Yes.
Not least because you're telling a story, but
yes.
Ganga, Grandad, is
yes.
a great believer in story. He talks about story being the stuff of life.
Yes.
Is he a mouthpiece for Niall Williams, really, when he says that, Ganga, Grandad?
To some extent, yes, absolutely. I'm very interested in storytelling. And I think, one of the things that I wanted to try and do in the novel was I wanted to try and create a literary version in some shape of what happens in an Irish session when Irish musicians come and play together. And how does one tune suddenly move into the next one? And then that leads to a different one. Whereas on a different night, a different tune might follow the first tune and so on. And so that slipping away into a side tune, as it were, and then coming back again. So in the novel, I've tried to create a series of stories that come and go from the main story as we slip off into a side story. For example, about the forester going to Finland or about the oven baking competition where the ESB decided to have a competition to prove that electric ovens were better than anything else, and the electricity was cut out during that. And that's a true story. So it was that idea of having many stories interweaving onto the main story.
And that main story, which is Christy is this stranger coming back to town, but there's a past that he has to
yes.
contend with, and I suppose best left for the reader to find out about that past. But one of the things that really struck me about this society that we're living in, yeah, there are aspects of it that there are nosy neighbours and there are people
yes.
who will tell you nothing, in fact, who
yes.
will keep their mouth very shut about giving out the privacy experts, I think
yes,
is the word that you use. They're very good at
yes.
finding out loads but telling you absolutely nothing. But is there a type of nostalgia for the Ireland of the 40s and 50s? Is this a nice version of Ireland that you're giving us from that period in time?
Well, it's the version that the narrator is recalling. So,
and he's an old man. He's
an old
70s
man. He's 70.
Back.
So I'm not yet in my 70s, but I find that when I recall the past, it's better than it was when I lived it.
Mm.
And I think that's a true human experience. And he is aware of nostalgia, and he's aware of the corrosive nature of nostalgia. But at the same time, as he's at a place in his life, the narrator is at a place in his life when what he wants to write about is the generosity of the human spirit. And that's the thing that has mattered most to him. And his encounter with his grandparents at that time, his encounter with Christy, these were positive elements in his life. And he wants to write out of that. And I understand that that's a difficult thing to do, to try and write about joy, about love, about generosity of human spirit. But that's what the book tries to do.
And finally, this is happiness then. This might
yes.
be about religion in the book. I suppose it's about a kind of spirituality or philosophy. That's what's in the book.
Yeah, I hope so. It's the idea essentially that we're alive at this moment and we don't know what's to come. But at this moment, this is what happiness is. In other words, it's not about euphoria or sort of an elated moment. It's the idea of understanding that the fact that we're breathing and alive and listening to music, as in the case of the novel, that's what happiness is.
Niall Williams speaking to me about his latest novel, This Is Happiness, which is published by Bloomsbury.